Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guest for this morning is Celise Berry, founder and executive director of Out and Equal Workplace Advocates. Celise and I will be discussing her organization's work in creating safe and equitable workplaces for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people around the world. Her new book, Out and Equal at Work, provides concrete examples of how workplaces around the globe can value, affirm, and protect their diverse employees. Good morning, Celise. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
I'm great, Johnny. Thanks for having me.
Wonderful. It is a pleasure to have you on the air. I'm very excited about learning more about your organization. Your book, Out and Equal at Work, gives a very insightful look at real-life, real situation with courage and conviction, so congratulations for that.
Thank you.
Let us start by getting to know you a little better. Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Okay. Well, I grew up in Oklahoma and went to school in Texas at University of North Texas. In guidance counseling, wanted to be a teacher, a guidance counselor, and did teach school in Dallas for a number of years. But I really wanted to do social justice work, and I was very involved in the church and wanted to provide leadership in a church position and do social justice work at the same time. And so I ended up going to seminary, and I chose San Francisco Theological Seminary, which is a Presbyterian seminary in the San Francisco Bay Area. And the very first month of seminary, I realized two very important things. One is that I finally came out to myself as a lesbian, and I, at the very same time, I learned that the Presbyterian Church does not ordain out lesbians, mm-hmm. Or gay men, bisexual or transgender people. So that left me a little bit of a quandary, and I spent 4 years getting a Master's of Divinity degree, which was both wonderful and, you know, left me kind of asking myself, now what do I do? Mm-hmm. And really feeling the injustice of not being able to get ordained and not really be able to follow my chosen career path. So I spent a couple of years, doing in nonprofit work and eventually started Out and Equal Workplace Advocates because I just felt so strongly about the fact that we should be able to, you know, do the work that we love and regardless of the person that we love. And so I've been doing this for 16 years, and after all of this time, have met so many incredible people through Out and Equal, doing work around lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered work in the workplace, mostly in doing making sure that policies are in place at large companies so that people can come out and be treated with dignity and respect, and so that brings us up to the present.
Wonderful. One of the things that I read in your personal article as a story about yourself is the fact that you went through a process within your own self, questioning which direction you should be going, and of course, denial process that you went through. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, it was a very difficult time in my life and it was the fact that I had just moved across the country from Dallas to the San Francisco Bay Area to go to graduate school, and that graduate school happened to be a Presbyterian seminary. I mean, all of those things kind of complicated things, but regardless, I was just getting to know I just had pushed that part of myself down. I looked back on my life and realized I had dated a lot of men, but I realized many times I had a little crush on their sister, or you know, there was somebody else in my life that I kind of had feelings for that was with a woman, and so it finally, you know, I finally started dating a woman in seminary, but we kept it so secret So, you know, to live in that kind of fear, and you have this, on the one hand, you're so excited to be in a new relationship. On the other hand, at the very same time, you're not mentioning pronouns. You're not saying who the person is. You never say her name. You know, that it just puts you in this bizarre, you know, kind of, and that's why people call it the closet, because you're in this very dark little tiny room where you're there's no sunlight. There's not a lot of fun, and you've got this great relationship, and yet you can't tell anyone about it.
One of the challenges, too, in reading the book, in your story in this case, I mean, I'm looking back, we're not talking about last year. We're talking about maybe 10, 20, 30 years ago kind of thing, and certainly the environment is not conducive to something like that. So there's a tremendous amount of pressure.
Yes, absolutely. Everyone, you know, we just grow up in a society, and definitely it's changing with certainly today with the conversations around marriage equality, the end of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Things definitely are changing for the better. But we still are surrounded by love stories on every television and every movie that's all about a man and a woman.
Right.
And a child grows up seeing that that's the only option that you have, and that, you know, from the time that children are tiny, they're asked who they're going to marry, who, you know, they dress up in a wedding gown because obviously they're going to get married, and if it's a girl, they're going to marry a boy, and the boy's going to marry a girl, and those are the only options that you have. And so to grow up and keep thinking, wait a minute, I should be attracted to this man, but really, or to this, you know, boy in school, but I'm really attracted to a girl, but I can't tell anybody.
Yes, very true. How did your personal experiences form your path to becoming an advocate for the LGBT people?
Well, certainly, you know, the denial of ordination, not being able to really pursue my career as a Presbyterian minister, led me to, you know, to want to do something on behalf of people at work. And so I, you know, started working with some small groups of people that were just beginning to organize about 16 years ago now, and brought them all together, again, with that passion about being able to do the work that we love regardless of who we love. And so that you know, I started a, right in seminary, I started a group called SLUTS, which was Seminary Lesbians Under Theological Stress, which was a lot of fun, but it was a very small organization with not a huge constituency. So I've been able to move on and really start, you know, out in Equal Workplace Advocates. And we have, you know, every year we have a big annual summit this year will be in Minneapolis, and we have it in cities around the country. We had one in Dallas a couple of years ago. We've had them in L.A. and Baltimore and D.C., and we have 2,500 people there, and from like 30 different countries. So we've come a long way from the early days. The very first one, we had about 200 people, and I was just so ecstatic, you know. And it's about 2,500 people and people from all over the world. So it's kind of exciting to see that.
You are very passionate about what you do, and it's seen in the work that you've done for your organization as well as in the book and so forth. I'm sure there are challenges that you personally faces and, say, LGBT individuals faces as a whole. Are there difference in the challenges that LGBT faces in the business world that is different in the social environment?
Well, I think, you know, I think on the one hand, the good news is that people aren't bringing a lot of their certainly people bring, you know, all of who they are to work, and that's kind of our goal, is to make sure that they can bring all of who they are to work.
Right.
Because so many people that are in the closet, and as I said before, if you're trying to hide who you are, hide who you, you know, are living your life with, every time you're talking to someone in a team meeting or around the water cooler, and you're trying to change pronouns, not talk about your weekend, people just automatically assume that you're a snob or that you are, you know, kind of socially inept.
Right.
And you're not yourself. you know, you're not putting that energy into your job. You're putting that energy into hiding yourself. So I think that's one of the biggest challenges in business is being able to, you know, finally when you come out, you're able to just talk about who you are, put your energy into to the job that you've been hired to do, and not worry about hiding.
How can companies create inclusive and diverse workplace environments?
Well, we have a whole list, and, you know, I'd encourage people that are interested in the topic to look at the Out and Equal Works website, the outandequal.org website, because we actually have a 20-step process that people say, you know, you really need 3 steps. But we encourage companies to ensure that they offer domestic partner benefits for LGBT employees, that they support an LGBT employee resource group so that LGBT employees can find one another and can talk about how to support the business. We, you know, right off the bat, they need to put sexual orientation and gender identity in their non-discrimination policies. We encourage, you know, people to market to the LGBT community. There's just a myriad of ways that they can really show support for the LGBT employees and for their customers and clients.
Did you face a lot of resistance in bringing this concept to the corporate world?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I certainly, in the very beginning, did a lot of cold calling. And, you know, but what the advantage was that there were already some groups of people in the Bay Area, especially in the San Francisco Bay Area,
sure,
starting to organize, and they were trying to make sure that they had employee resource groups established, and that once they got the group established, they really started doing a step-by-step process to ensure that they offered domestic partner benefits. So that's so much of the work that we've kind of done together. And so I've always started with an LGBT employee in the company to be able to navigate those waters. But we certainly, you know, offered we offer an LGBT diversity training to companies. And there are, you know, there have been a few times when people will sit at the back with their arms folded and they're just really not interested in hearing, you know, about the LGBT community. But, again, those things are changing too. But in the beginning, it was pretty challenging.
As I mentioned to you prior to getting on the air about how I feel as I read the book and in understanding you and talking with you, people don't understand how difficult it is to accomplish what you accomplish. I mean, I've worked at corporate America before, and I can assure you, I mean, there are corporations out there that talk about we're a corporate family, and we talk about is it the spirit of the law or the letter of the law? And many a times we have corporations out there, yeah, we're doing this, we're doing that, we're a corporate family, and we're doing it because of the letter of the law, since what you are advocating is not necessarily a federal mandate. I would think you would face a lot of challenges in terms of getting your concept and your acceptance in the corporate world.
And yes, Johnny, and I think that that's really important for people to understand that there is no federal law to protect lesbian and gay, bisexual and transgender community in the workplace. And so that's why we ask corporations to make sure that the policy is in place, because still there are 29 states where people can be fired simply for being gay, simply for being lesbian. And so we have still a lot of work to do. But as you're saying, you know, we're trying to make sure that the policy is in place and it's signed off and people have a policy. But the next step, as we all know, is really a cultural shift.
That's right.
And you can have all the policies that you want, but unless the culture is embracing. So, and that's, of course, you know, companies are really high on measurements and measuring things. Culture is harder to measure. But that's something that we, you know, bring with us and really try and have a conversation with folks really wanting to make a change in their workplace.
That's wonderful. What were the steps that you take to lead Out and Equal from a great idea to a successful organization?
Well, I think it was really I came in, you know, wanting to be a minister, and And what was really important to me was building community. Mm-hmm. And so I think that I, from the very beginning, recognized that a lot of these LGBT people often felt like they were the poster child in their company. They were the only out person, at these Fortune 500 companies. And so I thought, well, why don't we bring them together and remind mm-hmm. them they're not alone, that they have these colleagues at other companies. And little by little, they started making their own community within the company. But Out and Equal provides them a way to come together and really to just feel like there are other people doing this very vital, important work. I'm not the only person out there doing this. I'm not the only, person that was crazy enough to come out in my workplace. And it provides a sense of community, and I feel like that more than anything. And then our events are very professional. People are excited about being at the Out and Equal Workplace Summit. It's just mm-hmm. a wonderful opportunity to embrace the ideas of LGBT equality and, to have fun at the same yeah. time and to really be a part of something bigger than ourselves.
Your work has also gone global. Is U.S. ahead of everybody else, or are there countries out there that are way ahead in terms of advancement in workplace equality for LGBT people?
Yeah, it's interesting because certainly, Scandinavian countries, the Netherlands, even, the U.K., there are a number of countries in Europe that are farther ahead in on many levels,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
particularly around this issue. The Netherlands was the first country to have gay marriage, for example, marriage mm-hmm. equality. Mm-hmm. And others have followed suit, and hopefully our country will at some point. So there are certainly countries that are doing are farther along. But it's interesting in a place like Spain where you lesbian and gay people can be married, and yet so many people are not out at work. So I've met with people in Spain mm-hmm. that say, people don't really talk that much about
their private
life at work, and if you're gay or lesbian, you certainly don't bring it up. So it's mm-hmm. kind of interesting. I think in our country we can't be married, but more and more people are coming out at work. So
right. I think that's a culture deal, though, in some ways, don't you think?
It is, absolutely. And I think, in a place like Italy, you're mm-hmm. kind of under the shadow of the Vatican, and there's a...
Right. Mm-hmm.
Any country with a lot of Catholic, presence, people are more hesitant to come out, which is unfortunate.
That's interesting. I would think the Catholic would be a little bit more liberal than, say, the Protestants would be.
Yeah, I think, it kind of depends on, the country and the place.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of depends on if it's, right, if it's very conservative Catholicism mm-hmm. or very conservative, Protestant Christianity, because more progressive Catholic, yeah. the more progressive Protestant churches are certainly embracing the LGBT community.
Yeah. I would think, on the other hand, when you talk about out and equal at work, the interesting thing about it is that no matter whatever company you're with, the ultimate thing that drives every company is bottom line. And so when you look at that, they're looking at productivity and bottom line. They couldn't care less about who you are.
Exactly. And that was that was why it was interesting for me to make the transition from the church to corporations and to the business world, because I that was such a freeing kind of concept. And so so much of what we do, we always have a business case mm-hmm. for why it's important, and people realize, if you're paying this employee to come to work every day and yet they're putting all their energy into hiding who they are, then they're not as productive. And so mm-hmm. it's one of the many business cases for really freeing up people to focus on their job.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very interesting, because what I did, I remember when I was in the corporate world, one of the things that I changed was equal pay for the women and the men, in the sense that if the women are doing the same work in a managerial position, then they should be paid accordingly.
Exactly, right.
Yeah, so because I'm looking at performance and bottom line, not gender.
Right, right.
Yeah,
and women really paved the way, I think, for LGBT people, certainly people of color, and women, you know, they're getting the rights, and the work that they've done in both in society but also in the workplace has really helped the LGBT community kind of stand on their shoulders and say, you know, this is about equal pay for equal work, regardless of not just, you know, race or ethnicity or gender, but it's also about sexual orientation and gender identity. Yeah.
Wonderful. Out and Equal at Work is a wonderful book, as I mentioned to you earlier. What is the inspiration behind putting together such a wonderful anthology?
Well, over the years, just getting to know these amazing LGBT employees and more LGBT executives who were coming out in their companies and recognizing that they are leading the way around equality. And I thought at a certain point it was time to just tell the story about Out and Equal, about the organization, but also about these trailblazers, these pioneers that have really made a difference in their workplace. So I started just calling people up and meeting people at different events and asking people if they'd be willing to tell their stories. And 35 people accepted my invitation and wrote their stories about how they've made a change in their company. And we've ended up with Out and Equal at Work, which is a labor of love and a volume that I'm very, very proud of.
What is the favorite part about putting the collection together?
Well, it was really, you know, these are people that I've worked with and that I've gotten to know. A number of them are on the board of Out and Equal. But to really be able to hear their stories, because our stories are so powerful, and we're all kind of, you know, busy doing our work day in and day out and going to meetings, and we don't often take the time to stop and say, well, you know, let's listen to each other's stories. And so this was just a wonderful opportunity to get to know them in a whole different way, because I had a chance to hear their stories and to read their stories and to help them edit their stories in ways that and it gave them a wonderful opportunity to kind of reflect on where they are, how they got their company to be where it is today. So it was a wonderful experience.
For me, the book is all of that that you have mentioned, but the most important thing is that this book is not for, and I say this respectfully, the LGBT community. This book should be for everyone. I think as a person outside the community, I got a whole lot of information in there that's very heartwarming, very moving, very inspirational, and most importantly, as I read the various individual stories, putting myself in your shoes in terms like, oh my God, what would I have done in terms of fear factor and all those challenges? So I'm thinking from a different perspective. Am I right to say what I said?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And we, you know, encourage people to buy it for their families, for their, you know, for their HR director, for their CEO. And I also want to make sure that people in, you know, colleges and universities that are in, you know, high school that are just coming out and wondering, can I come out at work, you know, and for them to read it too, for the younger people to read it and say, wait a minute, these are, you know, we talked before about there's a lavender ceiling, or this myth of a lavender ceiling that you can't, if you come out, you are stuck in your job because nobody's going to want you to be promoted. But the stories of the folks in this book remind us that you can be an out lesbian, gay man, bisexual, transgender person and be successful.
And that brings us to this section of the interview, which I'm very excited about. I've selected several stories as points for our discussion this morning. So when I mentioned these individuals, because I really like the stories, what they stand for and so forth, please give us a short rundown of each of these individuals and their stories. Are you okay with that?
Yes.
Wonderful. Let us start with Brad Smith, who is the CEO of Intuit.
Yes. Brad is a wonderful human being, and there are four or maybe five allies in the book. And allies, of course, are our heterosexual colleagues that are supporting the LGBT community, and we couldn't do this great work without our allies. And Brad is an ally. He's, you know, married to a woman, has kids, but his best friend in from the time he was very, very young, growing up in junior high and middle school and and high school, was a gay man. And so a lot of his a lot of their friends in this little town assumed that they were together and that they were a couple. And Brad went to his father and said, you know, people are thinking that I'm gay. And his father just said, well, you know, you have, this is a important decision for you to make. Are you going to give up your friendship with your friend, or are you going to stand by him? And Brad decided, I'm going to stick by him. And they are best friends today, and he was best friend at his wedding. And it's a very sweet story. So he came and spoke, you know, in front of 2,500 people at our conference, and people were so appreciative of his being willing to tell his story about how, why he's an ally, why the LGBT community is important to him.
And I'm so glad we talk about Brad. The reason is because years ago when I ran into someone, I'm talking about, well, my gosh, maybe around 25 years ago or so, and he happens to be a working colleague. And it was funny, we were sitting in front of his house on the front porch, and he says, you know, Johnny, you're the only straight friend I have. And I thought, what do you mean by that? He said, because people don't want to, you know, they feel funny. I said, well, you know, you're a human being, right? I mean, you're not making a pass at me. I'm not making a pass at you. You know, we're talking as individuals here, as friends, because we're able to communicate and share thoughts. And I said, that's what's, it's important. It's got nothing to do with anything else. So, and that's why I chose that, because I thought that's important, because it's a stigma that we all have.
Right, right, exactly. And a lot of straight people want to ask, a gay person questions, but just don't feel like they have the language. And, we encourage people just to, you know, be open about their lives so that people do feel comfortable having those kinds of conversations.
Right, right. Wonderful. Well, the next one is George Kalogridis. He is the president of Disney Resort. Tell us a little bit about him.
George is this amazing man who started his career at Disney as a busboy. And about 30 years ago, and he is just, you know, gone. He's just this very, very smart, capable man who brings so much to his position, and was so he's, you know, basically climbed the corporate ladder, and he's now the president of Disney, Disney World Resort in Orlando, and he. For a short period of time, well, early in his career, I should say, he was outed by a colleague who was unhappy about having a gay, you know, executive that was visible, but he wasn't an out gay man. And so this person outed him on the company website, and he also sent a letter to his very conservative, kind of right-wing Christian church, and told them where his office was, and that they were thinking about doing this gay day, and that they needed basically, it was basically a threat. The CEO of Disney came to George and said, look, you know, we have your back. This has happened. We have fired this person. You know, we're putting you in touch with the sheriff's department so that we can ensure your safety. This is, you know, we don't, basically don't tolerate this kind of behavior at Disney. And so it allowed him then to, you know, he basically was outed to all of his colleagues. And, you know, no one wants that to happen, but it allowed him to finally, you know, be himself, and he continued to be promoted in his job even after he was, you know, outed, and then he obviously embraced who he is as a, as an out man, and has a very lovely partner, and they worked at Euro Disney in Paris for a number of years, and they're back in Orlando now, and he's just a wonderful human being who has a fabulous story.
And that's the reason why I chose that story, because two things. Number one, person, individual now, forget whether he's gay or whatnot, so forth. He worked his way up in life, number one. And number two is that people don't call it bullying, but that's what it is.
Exactly. You're right.
Yeah. So, and then to have Disney has always been progressive, to have them stand behind George is fantastic. And, of course, the underlying factor here, we're not talking about 2012 or 2013. He went through this 30 years in the sense that you're looking at a situation where it's not quite open back then, but yet there are progressive people that believe in the essence of being a human being.
That's right, exactly. And that are willing to stand up to blame, like you said.
Yeah, and that's truly wonderful. The third person I have in mind is Maggie Stumpt. She is the Chief Investment Officer with Prudential. Tell us a little bit about her.
Yes, Maggie is this lovely woman, very, very capable, very smart. And after you get to know her, then, and her story is that she basically started out as a male executive and realized that she was carrying around this desire for her entire life, knowing that she was in the wrong body. And she went through the process of transitioning from male to female and became, is probably the most successful out transgender person in the country and has really continued to be successful. And she, tells the story that there's still a lot of discrimination, and it's not that long ago that she, she was constantly being called by headhunters asking her to come and work for them because she was so successful. And she said, well, you should Google me first. And of course, she's very open about the fact that she's transgender. And she said as soon as she would say that, they'd say, oh, okay, and I'll call you right back. And then, of course, from them again. So the transgender community still has a long way to go in terms of acceptance. People, it's just a little it's too much for many people to understand. But so many companies are dealing with people transitioning on the job from male to female or from female to male and learning, that this is just, again, part of the human experience. And being able to really embrace those transgender people more and more, although we still have a long way to go.
Well, when we focus at bottom line and productivity, it's an equal level playing field.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so when you look at someone like her, who is very, very successful, it's basically shame on you, man.
All right.
I mean, that's the bottom line. I mean, it's just, it's sad, but it's true. I mean, companies can have conservative values and so forth, but you know what? We're not in church here.
Right.
We are at work. We have shareholders at stake if it's a public company. And the bottom line comes down, too, is that I'm not imposing my ideology and my philosophy of life upon you, because when we're here, we're strictly talking about corporate values and intentions and missions and goals and everything else. So it's sad because those are the prejudices that man made in some ways.
Exactly, yeah. And so people are having to rise above that on all kinds of levels.
Yeah. The next person is Roslyn Taylor O'Neill. She's the Vice President, Chief Diversity and Inclusion Officer for Campbell Soup. And this is interesting. Until I picked the book up, I never did realize there is such a position as a Chief Diversity and Inclusion Officer. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, Roslyn has been doing work around diversity for years and years, and she was an independent consultant, has been part of the kind of Out and Equal family for a number of years and always leads workshops there and was approached, I think, through some of her contacts at Out and Equal by Campbell's to be their chief diversity officer and has done a great job and really brings a lot of diversity, in her own personhood as an out lesbian, an African American woman. So she kind of has the gender, the race, and the sexual orientation thing, all that she is able to talk about very articulately. And she's, again, just another great story in the book talking about how all of those you know, aspects of her experience inform her work.
Let me ask you this. How about the races itself? I mean, what is the degree of acceptance within the African-American community, say, versus the white or even Asian in some ways with regards to LGBT?
Yeah, it's certainly a conversation that, you know, that my friends that are people of color have, and there's, I think, a stereotype that there's more homophobia in the African-American community or in other people of color communities, which, you know, other people say, you know, it's just that white people are better at keeping secrets, or just better at, you know, kind of tamping down their feelings, whereas yeah. people of color are just more, you know, articulate or just kind of willing to just put it out there. So it's, you know, I think they're trying to kind of look at that through an academic lens. But, I think that in general, I have people of color who've come out and been very accepted by their family and friends in their community, and white people have been rejected by their family, and the opposite is true too. So I think people are people, and we still, we've come a long way, and we still have a work to do.
Do you have a specific program that's focused on, say, minority, races?
What we do is we offer an LGBT diversity training and specific to LGBT, but we always put it in the context of broader diversity issues. So we talk about sexism, we talk about racism, and how that they're very prevalent today, even though we feel like we've been doing this work for many, many years. But racism is alive and well in the United States and around the world, and we still have a lot of work to do. And that we put homophobia and LGBT issues in that same context and help people make the connections. But at the same time, we don't want to. We're not trying to say, you know, everything around a person of color's experiences are like mine, because that's absolutely not true. And
right.
Those of us in the LGBT community, many of us can hide. We don't have to come out all the time, whereas a person of color and a woman comes out every day because of who they are and what they look like.
Do you feel that this is a generational issue? So maybe in about 2 to 3 generations, this will sort of take care of itself in some way?
Yeah, I think, and certainly it will not be the same kind of issue that it is today. And, you know, I think it's because of the work, again, of the folks in this, the book, the people that are trying to really change their workplace. It's the people that they're trying to change schools and the educational system. It's the people that are, you know, trying to make changes in society for lesbian and gay, bisexual and transgender people, that's really making a difference, so that we will get to a place, I think, where it'll be, you know, interesting and special to be part of the LGBT community, but it won't be there won't be such discrimination and oppression that people look today.
That brought up an interesting issue now, because like in everything, in every society, in every community, you always have the extreme. The extremists that are trying to get their message out. How are you guys combating that issue, that aspect of it, that the extreme people in your community that going off the handle here?
The extreme people that are against our community or within our community?
Within the community. I'm broadening up the issue here. Let's take the current situation with, say, religion. Well, we have extreme in the Christian world. We have extremists in the Muslim world, obviously, right now that we're facing. And then we have, obviously, there's no doubt in my mind, I'm sure, the extremists in the LGBT community as well. How do you temper that?
Well, you know, when 20 years ago, when HIV and AIDS was being talked about on a very regular basis, people said, you know, we should be meeting with the CDC, and what's wrong with it? Why are these ACT UP people out there doing die-ins all the time and laying in the street? And they should just kind of calm down and put a suit on and make a change. And yet, it really took everybody. It took people who are really in your face saying, you know, we're tired of dying and having a president that cannot, you know, Ronald Reagan never even said the word AIDS, I think, in his whole tenure, and people were being ignored, and so it took the wake-up call that ACT UP provided, and I think the same is true, you know, there are people in the LGBT community that look at Out and Equal and say, oh, they've sold out, they're working, and kind of thing, you know.
Right.
But I think that's how social change happens. There's people that need to be out protesting, and on the weekends I might be out with them, you know, and then during the week I'm maybe be sitting in a board meeting talking about, you know, changing the policies at a large company. So I think it takes kind of everyone's effort to really make a difference.
But what you're saying, which is interesting too, situation will dictate on whether you need to be extreme in your point of views to get attention, but you don't stay high powered, you know, on the extreme side or say laid back side in either way, because you are going to get stomped on.
Right, exactly. So I think reading the situation makes all the sense as the context of the situation,
right,
and being able to provide. But unfortunately, we're all not as mature as we'd like to be sometimes. You know, you get angry or upset. But as long as, you know, you're willing to have the dialogue and continue.
Right.
And it's hard. It's hard to be having a dialogue. I've gone back to the seminary where I graduated and thinking, oh, it's evolved. Everybody's, you know, surely people are embracing of LGBT issues. But, you know, there was one woman that was just so, and she was like, you know, what do you think about the fact that, you know, you and all your friends are going to hell and, you know, that kind of vitriolic response, and I, you know, all of my rational things went out of my head, and I just wanted to kind of like, what are you talking about? What planet are you from?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And it's hard, and you know, there's still obviously evangelicals trying to pass anti-gay bills in Africa, and you know, they'd love to do it here in the United States too, and it's hard when somebody doesn't even know you and just
Right.
is very, very angry and hateful, and then so it's important to kind of rise above that and respond in a calm way, but it's not always possible.
Well, the God I know is a loving God, so it may be true that I may go to hell, but certainly I don't know that. You may know that, but that's okay. Maybe perhaps you need to pray for me, but certainly what you're doing is not giving you an automatic seat in heaven either, so. The fact that God is ultimately a loving God.
Yeah, exactly. And I think if you, all you have to do is look around at the creation and recognize that God loves diversity.
Right.
God, you know, would never have made all these amazing differences in people if that wasn't part of God's, you know, makeup. And so I think anybody that wants everybody to be the same is living a kind of a sad life, really.
Right. Yeah. Let's continue with another individual, Deborah Daggett. I hope I'm pronouncing her name correctly. She's Vice President and Chief Diversity Officer for Merck.
Yes, and Deb Daggett is a huge ally to the lesbian, and gay, bisexual, and transgender community. She is married to her husband. She is differently abled and has experienced a lot of discrimination for her abilities, and so she understands what it's like to experience oppression just based on, you know, something that she has no control over. And so, and she also had a gay cousin growing up who ended up, I believe, dying of AIDS at a young age, and just had a real commitment and strong commitment to our community, and is kind of out there on the front lines fighting for us, and it makes us want to also fight for the disabled community as well.
What I like about her story is the fact that we know people among our friends, our inner circle, our slightly outer circle, who are gay or whatever. And having her testimonial in the book is unique because we have a situation, I think, what was it, about a week ago or so, where you have a senator that changed his point of view with regards to the most current issue about the gay marriage and so forth. It's up in the Supreme Court, and he's in support right now. I believe he's a Republican senator. And he says, you know, what hit me was I had an opportunity to know my friends, my colleagues, and all of a sudden right now, there are people just like me. And here I'm against an issue, say, a policy that will be discriminating against them, and that I cannot do, which is very interesting, because let's limit and narrow the issue down to just ultimately, like you and I were talking about, we're all human beings.
Yes, that's right. And I, again, I think that that just really speaks to the power of people sharing their stories. Mm-hmm. And if everybody that's part of the LGBT community is closeted and afraid to say who they are, then all of these people that are changing their hearts and minds wouldn't have an opportunity to meet LGBT people. And so
right.
The fact that people are finally free to be out and, we like to say out and equal, you know, gives them an opportunity to have those conversations and those just putting it out there. And then it really does change people's hearts and minds. Because, and what's so important in the workplace, people get to know Maria, who happens to, you know, she's a fabulous marketing person. And, oh, by the way, she happens to be a lesbian, you mm-hmm. know, or Ron, who's great, a great IT person. And, oh, by the way, he's, you know, he's gay. Mm-hmm. And it's just not that huge big deal. It's just like, well, and then colleagues get to know them and they go, wow. And then next time they have an opportunity to vote on behalf of marriage equality, they vote on, you know, on the right side of history.
Right. Wonderful. The last person I have is Renee Brown, Senior Vice President and Director of Enterprise Social Media with Wells Fargo. Tell us a little bit about her.
Renee is a lovely woman. She grew up in Louisiana and in the South, and always thought that she was probably the only lesbian in Louisiana. And of course, you know, learned that was not necessarily true, and has again been extremely successful in her career. She was at Wachovia and now at Wells Fargo, and continues to be promoted in more and more senior positions and now really runs their social media efforts. She just joined the board of Out and Equal, and we're very thrilled to have her. She's very involved in her church. She and her partner, they have a daughter and live in Charlotte, North Carolina, and she's, you know, kind of doing the work day in and day out. And people think about the South is not as progressive sometimes as other parts of the country, but she just is, you know, it's who she is, and she and her partner are very active in her daughter's school and in their church, and really making a huge difference in the South.
I chose that story because of the fact that she's a parent with her partner.
That's right, yes.
And I wanted it to be shown that it's better to have a loving family than not to have a family at all.
That's right. And there are a number of people in the book, interestingly, that are parents and, mm-hmm. You know, just their involvement, not just in their children's lives, but their children's schools, mm-hmm. Getting to know the other parents of their children's friends. Again, is another way that they're really making a difference in society.
Wonderful. So what is your favorite story in the book?
You know, I think just the story that it's written and that it's actually a published book is my favorite part, because it, you know, it was, as I said, a labor of love. Mm-hmm. It started as an idea, and now to actually have the actual book in my hand is something to celebrate.
That's wonderful. Where can someone go to buy your book and get more information about you and keep up with the latest happenings in your organization?
The best place to go is our website, which is www.outandequal.org. And you can go right on there and click on buying a book and get the book there. They're also available online on Amazon and a number of different online e-books as well, but a lot of the information that we've talked about is right there on the website at outandequal.org.
You chose a bunch of executives and people that are really at the top to contribute to the book. How important is that to do it in this manner? I know we talk about it in so many ways in terms of weaving it to make people understand that there are role models out there. What is so important about this?
Yeah, I think that certainly, you know, they're in the part of their career where they've had an opportunity to, like you said, to become successful in the business world and to really make a difference on behalf of the LGBT community. And some of them, it's by being a very senior person who's willing to come out. Again, you know, many of them are currently or have been on the Out and Equal board and trying to, you know, spread the good news of Out and Equal in a broader broader way. But the people that that we chose, most of them, as you said, are senior executives, which are reminders that there are role models, that you can be successful. And they're also, you know, people that are close to the organization, that are doing the work day in and day out, mm-hmm. and who are really living and walking, you know, walking the talk, not just talking the talk.
Yeah, definitely. So this is an interesting fact. Why did Out and Equal choose to publish the anthology on Valentine's Day?
Well, we just felt like it was really important. We kind of wanted to remind people that we should be able to love who we love.
Mm-hmm.
And to bring that message home, that it's really, when it gets right down to it, the lesbian, mm-hmm. and gay, bisexual, and transgender community is really about having the freedom to be who we are and to love who we love. And we thought having our first kind of book launch on Valentine's Day would give an opportunity to do that.
Wonderful. That's very, very interesting. By the way, we're coming close to the end of the hour. Since our show is about people, family, and living life, would you like to share a recipe for living with our listeners this morning?
A recipe for living?
Yes.
You know, I think gratitude is just so important to me, to be able to live your life in freedom, to ask for what you want is important, mm-hmm. and then to say thank you. To always have gratitude in your heart for what you have is, I think, my recipe for life.
Has it served you well?
It has served me well. And I think, you know, having a vision for what your life might be, that's what got me through the dark days when I was trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life, learning that I was a lesbian, couldn't get ordained. But I had a vision for a wonderful life with a wonderful partner, and I have created that life for myself. And I say thank you for it every day.
Wonderful. That's a wonderful recipe for living. What is Out and Equal's focus for 2013?
You know, as we mentioned, it's so important to continue this vital work in these United States, still working to make sure that there's a federal law to protect us and making sure that the work has expanded in company after company. And we're also working with a lot of multinational companies, and they're coming to us saying, well, you know, what about India? What about China? What about places, mm-hmm. in the world where we're doing business but don't have progressive laws? And so we're trying to look at ways to really expand our work globally. We're putting together a resource list of best practices so that people can just go online, download something, have an actual little book so they can look through it and say, these are the laws in certain countries. These are ways that you can roll out your policies globally. These are some of the pitfalls that other companies have had. So looking at ways that we can keep expanding this work around the world is what 2013 is about.
Are there countries out there that are more receptive to
Absolutely.
Your movement?
Absolutely, and there's lots. I think we're at 12 or 13 countries now that you can actually be legally married, mm-hmm. that marriage equality is part of the law. And there are still 70-plus countries where you're imprisoned for being lesbian or gay, bisexual or transgender. And so we've got, again, right now there are, and then there are many, many countries, you know, that are trying to have civil unions and different kinds of protections, but we still have a long way to go with countries that are still either imprisonment or even the death penalty for lesbian and gay, bisexual, and transgender people.
Coming back to the United States, I mean, obviously we're very progressive now. The climate is very conducive to what you're doing. Are you still finding resistance in some companies?
Yes, and often it's small pockets, and we get you know, email about, again, you know, because there's no federal law, there are still people
right.
that are being fired, and there's no recourse. And so we don't actually do that kind of work in terms of we don't have
sure.
a legal team that would protect somebody that was being fired, but we would, you know, be able to. But, you know, there's still homophobic people, unfortunately,
right.
in every company. And so we're just really reminding people it's about respect for all at work, and the fact that, you know, if you're in the company, the bottom line is the important thing, as you said before, and everyone deserves to be treated with dignity and respect at work.
Mm-hmm. How has writing the book impacted you personally?
Well, I think it's a culmination of these 16 years of my life committed to creating the organization Out in Equal Workplace Advocates, mm-hmm. and then to have a book that really speaks about the organization, but also so the powerful stories of these individuals who have really made a difference. I just am very proud of them as human beings and as advocates. On behalf of the work that we're doing, and I'm just very proud of the stories and the book.
Fantastic. Well, Celise, thank you for the great recipe for living that you had shared with us earlier and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Marcela Maris. Born in Rio de Janeiro, Marcela is an actress, writer, lawyer, and a monthly columnist for the Orange County Register in Southern California. Marcela and I will be discussing her debut sci-fi novel, The Chosen Gia. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. Thank you for listening and have a blessed week. Celise, thank you again and have a blessed day.
Thank you, Johnny.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.